Mike? AJ? I don't think they're here, guys.
Excellent.
Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for Friday, May 22nd. This is Mike Tolcoto Minotti. Oh, wait a second. Mike's not here. So you have some special replacement hosts and guests today. This is Chris Rock God Whittington. I am the host of the Squadron of Shame Squadcast, and I got a few other co-conspirators here with me. We got Mark Beige Whiting over there in the corner.
Yo.
And you got Jeff Fienwagger Parsons in the other corner.
Hola.
In the final corner, we have Craig Scribble Ostrin. How's it going, man?
How you doing?
Off the turnbuckle, fight! We're ready.
We are ready.
It's the Minotti brothers picked exactly the week to go away to Disneyland. Just exactly the time that everything started to get real.
Oh, God, I
love following AJ's Twitter. It's like reliving my childhood.
Just sent me a photo of his feet and a glass of something frosty on the beach.
Yeah. So God bless him.
I hope they're having fun down there.
Not only that, but they're also enjoying HP steak sauce over there, and he's very happy because it's a favorite of the Davison family, apparently.
They're mine. Anybody who's from British extraction has like plus 20 to love HP.
Yeah, but we're kind of British extraction too, though.
You guys gave it up. You gotta give it up. But it's not about steak sauce. It's about video games.
So, that's right. Okay,
how about we just slide right into the schedule? We're going to be doing news first. You know how this works.
We're going to be doing news first, and then we're going to do the Great American Fienwagger Quiz because, AJ's not here to be tormented. So Fien decided to throw himself in front of the firing line.
Starting the games of 2000, which we'll be running through.
Which luckily I played and was conscious that entire year.
Me too.
It's nice to have a couple of guys who are actually gaming in the year in question. So.
Yeah, I was older than two that year.
That's good.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Encouraging.
Hearing that Mike was playing Mega Man 2 when he was 5 years old was an upsetting soundbite.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah,
so,
I'm with you.
So, shall we?
Yeah, I think we shall.
News it up.
It is a lot of news.
Yeah, we've got plenty of news. So we're just going to start up at the top and in no particular order or roughly by order of what's happened since last Friday. Let's get to it.
Yep.
So let's talk about Team Fortress. Since that's been a week-long experience. Valve has rolled out. They've been doing a spy versus sniper thing over at their website. And they've just officially rolled out the sort of last couple of announcements. First of all, TF2 is going to be free for a while, a day, actually, so that's nice. Also, they've released the spy, Team Fortress 2 free this weekend. So May 21st through May 25th, you can go online and kill people all you want.
Well, who doesn't have Team Fortress 2 at this point? I mean, haven't they been given away for free or for, $2 or $5 for the last year or so?
I don't know. Valve has some sort of crazy logic by which they handle this stuff. Like, remember when Left 4 Dead went half price and suddenly the sales doubled? They
right.
know what they're doing.
Oh, no. Plus,
people get to play with these new unlockables. So I guess the Spy has a couple of new watches. There's something called the Cloak and Dagger Watch that makes you invisible as long as you're standing still and doesn't run out of battery.
Okay.
So it's kind of there's another watch. I'm trying to remember what it's called, but what it does is it creates a decoy version of you lying dead in a pile of your own blood while your real self actually skips out of town secretly, which is kind of cool. And there's also a new spy gun called the Ambassador, which is a great big ass like six shot 45 looking thing that they demoed in their little Meet the Spy video, which also released this week. And there was some sort of foolishness about people at Valve being fired over the release of this video, which I'm not even really sure what the status of that is now, but it all seems to be an elaborate prank since they've been firing people all week off the Valve site, and now the company is down to a single individual, if you believe their blogs. So, it sounds like a cagey bit of marketing there. Anybody going to play TF2?
No.
No. Not really.
If Ceranix was on this podcast, he would he'd probably chime in.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Ubisoft wanting to go to Hollywood. I guess that emboldened by Prince of Persia, etc., now they are keen on getting into the special effects business. So they feel that they have the expertise to create special effects graphics and animation, although they're not specifically looking at movie production as well, which is kind of interesting. I think they probably, with their, if you, you know, look at the prints there, they've definitely got some artistic chops. And
yeah.
If they're looking to sort of, consult, I guess, on, I don't know who could use it, Pixar type stuff or Disney type things, it makes sense.
I don't know. I think it's kind of dangerous, though, because that while the video game industry is growing the way it is, it's a very different business than the movie business. And, I mean, yeah, you can make a lot of new and interesting and exciting effects. We're not at the level of Hollywood, because Hollywood has to make stuff look realistic. Video games don't. It just needs to look nifty or, you know, cartoony or, you know, whatever. The bar is not set as high. And not only that, but I mean, the video game industry doesn't have unions either, so there's that aspect as well. So I don't know. There's just all kinds of differences. I think it's going to be tough to pull off, but that's just me.
How about Capcom pulling out of E3 because of their Japanese people are terrified of the swine flu?
The dumbest thing I've ever heard.
And not only that, but I've been seeing all these other stories all week about various Japanese organizations pulling out of other conferences, not video game related, but some of the marketing conferences that fly through my agency and stuff. It seems like, I don't know whether they got spooked by Resident Evil 5, but they're just staying at home and not venturing abroad. So
I heard that they had like 119 or 191, maybe I'm getting my numbers crossed up, but they had a whole lot of swine flu cases there, so they've passed out like the masks and everything, and they're encouraging the people not to travel internationally. They're saying you can, they're just encouraging you not to. So they just don't want to pull off anything big like this. I mean, it wouldn't be good for Capcom to come out of Tokyo and show up to LA and infect the whole gaming industry with the swine flu.
Although there would be an irony in it. Maybe yeah. It could tie it into Dead Rising somehow.
Maybe they just feel bad because Bionic Commando sucks.
Oh,
we'll get to that.
Uh-oh.
Anybody care about Tatsunoko versus Capcom?
I think it's really cool that it's coming out, but
I'm sure if Mike was here, he'd be dancing around with some sort of... He seems completely excited about the Capcom versus anything fighting games, but... To be fair, I did cut my teeth on GeForce growing up, and I would welcome the idea of playing them, but I was just going to say that.
I didn't know that those characters were in the game, and I saw that. It's like, oh, that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, I think I see the guy from Onimusha 4 on the cover of what they've released, but I don't know any of these other characters.
Well,
I'm willing to learn, but hey, GeForce in and of itself in a fighting game is something I might be interested in.
Well, see, I don't know any of these quirky Japanese characters in it, but I do have to say that I like the graphical style of this game better than Street Fighter 4. I don't have a problem with the whole ink splot nature of Street Fighter 4, but there's something about the eyes, the characters, that just kind of throw me off. I like this art style. It's a lot more appealing to me.
Since we're talking about Capcom, anybody excited about the fact that they have apparently more than 10 iPhone games planned for 09?
Anybody on this show?
Yeah, no.
It's kind of cool. I mean, as long as it doesn't... I mean, I have an iPhone, and I do play games on it. But, you know, as long as it doesn't turn out to be Assassin's Creed, where you're basically just pressing buttons that they put on the screen, and it's, you know, ports from the DS or whatever... you know, if it's some unique stuff, I'll check it out.
Anybody played the Metal Gear Touch or whatever it is on the iPhone?
Nope.
I have. They put out a light version, which is basically a limited version that's free. And I downloaded it, but I haven't checked it out yet.
Well, we're talking about Japanese people, so let's talk about this new RPG that apparently Sega is making, Resonance of Fate. I see this link from your new stream feed. What do you think about that? A new RPG. This is how Sega describes it. Resonance of Fate redefines the RPG genre with a unique storyline, highly stylized graphics, and an emphasis on realistic gunplay and engrossing action. A gritty, highly mechanized world unlike any other, with Hollywood-style action sequences, customizable weapons, and memorable characters.
Here's my prediction. I will buy it when it comes out. I will play it. I will spend one podcast saying how I think it's pretty cool. Rock will ask me if I've lost my mind. And then I will appear on a future podcast and say, Rock, you were right. I got bored of it and traded it in.
Yeah.
No. So we don't have high hopes for it. I'm interested in, you know, the Japanese people keep looking over here and trying to predict what we like. It could work. I'm not sure if realistic style gunplay is something I expect in my RPGs, but I'm willing to be proved wrong.
Well, speaking of Japan trying to appease the Western audience, isn't there a news article about Last Remnant where it sold better in the West, but it didn't really sell overall?
If you define better as being 220,000 units in North America, and the thing that surprises me, only 160,000 in Japan. Wow. So I'm not sure what happened there, because on the surface, I'm playing it right now, it looks to me like something that, you know, based on what I know of Japanese people, pretty Bishinini looking boys killing monsters with big swords, all the tropes seem to be in place. I don't understand 160,000, but maybe they're just not ready to kick some A. It's the only thing I can think of.
Maybe they're not all getting hyped.
They're not getting hyped? I thought everyone was getting hyped. Yeah, no.
Oh,
it's,
man.
I have nothing for that. I feel it's a shame. Maybe it's just bad word of mouth because of the hardware issues on launch. But
While we're on that game, I'll let Rock just take his shots. I gave up this week and traded it in. I will tell you why. I was stuck on a particular boss battle. And while I was at work last week, I picked up the strategy guide and thumbed through it. And it dawned on me the reason I was stuck wasn't because that boss battle was difficult, but because I had done everything up until that battle wrong.
Yep. Exactly. This is okay.
And not because of anything I had done, it's because I didn't have the guide. So I wasn't doing all the things that I was supposed to have done in order to, like, use this power and have your six unions. I'm like, what the fuck? Power? Six? I got three. Then I realized that if I was going to do anything in this game, I was going to need to go back, start over, do it right with the guide. If I wanted to read, I'd read. If I wanted to play a game, I'll play a game. If I wanted to do both at the same time, well, I won't.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
This. I mean, I've complained, not just me, a lot of people have complained about this is what's wrong with Japanese role-playing games, that they design games to where you must buy the guide to complete it. And as much, and I've said this on the Squadcast before, as much as I really love the Persona series and I've had so much fun with 3 and 4, I went into 4, I actually received the game and the guide as a gift, and I went into 4 and played it from the beginning with the guide, and I do not regret it, because I'm actually going to be able to finish 4 where I didn't finish 3 because I didn't use the guide in 3. And
I want to know if anyone in Japan is making money off of strategy guides, though. I mean, surely GameFAQs has just kicked the pegs out from that entire industry.
Isn't
they
that bad
be.
Design, though? Really? I mean, isn't that... Like, if you need the book to get through the game, they've failed in their design.
That's
yeah,
one of the many reasons why I don't play JRPGs anymore. Even Pokemon. Yeah. I mean, Pokemon, you gotta have that big square grid. Strengths and weaknesses. That thing is burned into my 8-year-old brain.
Well, certainly with realistic gunplay, we'll draw you back in.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Moving right along, let's stick with Asia for a second. Apparently, there's a Katamari Damacy MMO, or a multiplayer game, coming to Korea. I just wanted to throw that out there. I have no idea how it works, but it sounds like mass chaos. I just hope it's implemented better than Nobi Nobi Boy.
It's the perfect kind of game for Korea because they can charge, you know, 20 cents per thing that you roll over. You know?
In debt the entire country to them instantly, yeah. Just charge a dime for every meter your Katamari needs to get, yeah. Microtransactions.
You know, I'm starting to sense that, you know, we're starting to see a lot more Korea-style MMOs come out, like Free Realms and things like that, and it seems like they're really starting to take hold. I mean, I've listened to a couple of recent podcasts this week, and I hear a lot of talk about how Free Realms is great, and people are getting hooked into the card game aspect of it, and it looks like it's really taken off, and I'm surprised because all these developers that were talking about bringing these Korean micropayment style games over, they were getting all this heat saying, no, it's never going to work, but it looks like, you know, maybe doing okay with it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Here's something that we all might be interested in. So apparently Sony's passing a survey around at the moment, talking to developers about whether they'd be interested in renting their PSP games over the Sony PlayStation Store.
Well, it depends. I mean, for I guess looking at it from the developer perspective, it depends on how secure it's going to be. You know, if people have to download the whole game to rent it, and then they find a way to crack it, and then they have the whole game for free, then that's
the way the survey sounds like it's set up. What Sony's talking about is something that sounds kind of like a Napster. So you pay a rental service, and you subscribe to it, and then you just have access to the back title libraries that people put over the surface, which could be cool.
Like a Gamefly online kind of deal?
Yeah, through the hypothetical service, says the news piece I'm reading here, PSP owners would pay a monthly fee to gain access to a library of new and archived games off the PlayStation Store. It's still theoretical, but it seems that it's kind of a Steam console version, you know, allowing people to get around the piracy problem while still making a lot of that back catalog stuff available. I'm certainly in favor of it.
My only problem with that is it sounds like the kind of technology that would be dripping with DRM. And I'm not one of those people that hears DRM and immediately, you know, starts eating granola and protesting in the streets. But it just seems like those types of things only screw legitimate buyers.
Yeah, I don't know. The back catalog problem is tricky because if you put a ROM out there, right, if one person can download it to a memory stick, then everyone gets it. So I wouldn't mind a little DRM as long as it's in this form of, like, authentication to the service, the way that Steam works, then I'm cool with it.
Right.
But if I'm on the subway and my PSP needs to dial back to the Inertron just so that it can authenticate whether or not I have the rights to play Snake Eater, then no deal.
It all sort of falls apart at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I feel about this whole rental thing, but I do have to give Sony credit because it's showing that they're trying. They're trying to figure out a way to beat this piracy thing because people are, I mean, they're selling PSPs, but they're not selling software. So they're trying to find some kind of way to compensate for that. Personally, I think that they should just take their PS1 catalog and flood PSN with all sorts of games. And there's a news article about that later, but they need to put stuff out there in the channel. But I don't know. A lot of the news that I've seen recently, especially leading up to E3, shows me that Sony is trying to find ways of putting all these rumors and all this speculation out in the market, and it's very encouraging to me, at least.
Since we're talking about the PSN, Rock, you forwarded this to me about an hour ago. Monster Hunter demo today on the PSN.
Yep.
So, you know, what is it? Let's see.
Okay, here, I'll tell you what it is. Monster Hunter, in my opinion, is the kind of Pokemon game that would have been acceptable for us had we been a teenager and they came out.
It's still acceptable for me. Like, I would go hunt monsters with a bow gun and break them down for components.
I mean, look at the monsters. Yeah, PSP only. It's Monster Hunter Freedom Unite. I'm actually downloading it right now, or it's queued up to download right after my Infamous demo, which I'm really stoked about. But yeah, the monsters are cool, and Monster Hunter, as most of you probably know, is majorly huge in Japan, and it's literally just a monster hunting game, and you just go and you find all these monsters, and the monsters are really cool. They're really elaborately designed.
Shadow of the Colossus kind of look to a lot of the screenshots that I've seen. Now, I don't know if it'll play like a JRPG, but I'll download it. Sure, why not?
I'm pretty sure it's a very straightforward JRPG that's actually a lot less story, a lot more battle-focused. But the one thing that really impressed me about Monster Hunter is that it's so big in Japan, they sell these really detailed sculpts of the monsters in, like, this, like these huge 12-inch toys or whatever. And they had this show that I saw a couple of years back on the web, and if I find the link, I'll post it. But, I mean, me being a kind of a toy, I love toys and I love sculpting, and seeing the kind of stuff that's available in Japan for this really got me fired up about the game. So,
well, let's stick with Sony once more and talk about Little Big Planet. Apparently, there's a portal coming. A Little Big Planet level sharing portal is soon to be released, and it will collect everyone's levels together, allowing people to share them by linking to an individual level's page, and it will allow them to be queued so that the next time you load up Little Big Planet, they can be displayed for easy access. Basically, it's going to change how people find levels on Little Big Planet, and they won't have to touch the search feature again. So I don't know if anybody still cares about Little Big Planet at this point in time, but could be interesting.
Yeah. Fix the jumping. Fix the jumping. That's all I ask.
You know what's funny? Speaking of fix the jumping, I saw, I think it was on Friday or something, I subscribed to the PlayStation Blog's RSS feed, and they said, upcoming this week, and they said, Little Big Planet, the patch. And I thought, oh, it's going to be a patch. You're going to fix the jumping. And then, no, the patch is this other thing. And it's probably what you're talking about, Bae. It's, just, it's this
it
other
helps.
Thing. So,
yeah, it helps Sackboy quit smoking. I don't know.
Right.
I'm not really. Little Big Planet is sitting there on my shelf. It's about one third finished, and I just kind of lost interest in it, which is shocking considering how charming it is.
And how hyped I was before.
Maybe I'll go back to it. But yeah, I think Sturgeon's Law just kind of came into effect, and that 90% of everything people create is crap.
Yep.
So I just kind of got bored with it.
Even what the developers created, 90% of that, crap.
Yeah, but think about it. If someone could, you know. If you saw a link on Twitter that linked you to an LBP page with a map that someone said, oh, that's pretty sweet, you know, and you could just download that and go turn on Little Big Planet for a minute, yeah, I'd probably, you know, I haven't touched the game in months, but...
Well, anything they could do that would make it more relevant is fine by me, so I guess we'll see when it happens.
I don't know if we have this story in the queue, but the next thing time that I will fire Little Big Planet up is if it was true and there is a Ratchet and Clank pack coming out for it.
That would definitely be cool.
I thought that you found something.
I saw that
about
story yesterday.
Okay. Yeah.
Speaking of things that are dumb, let's talk about Aragorn's Quest. Have you guys seen this?
No, what is that?
Warner Brothers Interactive, it owns the Lord of the Rings license.
Oh my god.
So they have recently revealed a game which is called Aragorn's Quest. You know, stars Aragorn, that could be good. It is described as the first Lord of the Rings video game created specifically for kids and their families, and features accessible gameplay set in a friendly, colorful rendition of Middle-earth.
Yeah.
I mean, what?
Dude.
What?
Okay.
What's the next story?
I want Gears of War Family Party next. If they can do that, then they can do, you know, Marcus Fenix Puzzle Fighter. No. Lord of the Rings is dark and good. Leave it that way.
I'm going to say something that's going to give me a lot of hate mail, but do we really need to give a character who allows stereotypical Dungeons & Dragons dorks to have their hero, this unbathed, long-haired, unshaven... never mind. We don't need to give him any more of a spotlight.
Pass.
Yeah.
Speaking of good games that are cutesy, Plants vs. Zombies sold a lot this week.
Oh, right on.
Yep, it's PopCap's fastest-selling game.
I was one of those.
How about that?
I mean, is it worth playing? Is it good?
It gets the demo's like one of those PopCap things where you get the demo and it's like 60 minutes to play the full game. Mm-hmm. And then you buy it and it keeps your progress. So I think, at first I was like, this is kind of fun. It's $10. I'll buy it just because if I end up buying it later, I don't want to lose my like hour of playtime. Mm-hmm. It gets pretty deep. You end up getting like, you know, you start off with like two plants and it's just, okay, place the plants in front of the zombies. But it ends up getting pretty deep. You end up getting like
10 plants, then 20 plants, then 30 plants, and you have to decide beforehand your sort of hand of cards to go into the level with. I don't know. If you check it out on co-op, the like latest episode of co-op, I think.
Would you describe it as another PopCap game that hardcore gamers wouldn't be embarrassed to enjoy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, okay.
That's good.
I don't feel any like self-conscious, like, oh, I'm dipping into Bejeweled. Like, I don't, it's not a big deal. But yeah.
We're especially vain, so we may have a different take. but I did hear that actually the writing in it is really funny and really clever, and a lot of the I guess there's a mini game called it's a rip off of Peggle. What's it called? I don't know. There's some kind of mini game in the game.
There's
not have gotten to that part yet.
There's something called Bejeweled.
That's it. Sorry. Not Peggle.
Yeah,
Bejeweled, yeah. That's it. Bejeweled.
Yeah, where it's like you're playing Bejeweled with your plants, like matching three and stuff and moving them around, but at the same time, zombies are attacking. So
I think Bejeweled in general could be improved by zombies, but...
Well, what couldn't be improved by zombies?
Right. Hey, speaking of zombies...
Yes?
Oh, I thought you... Okay, never mind. Well, then let me go ahead and just drop this one news thing. On PSN... pretty soon is a game called Zombie Apocalypse, and it's going to be a four-player online co-op game that's in the vein of like a Smash TV or Robotron 2084, where it's just you and three of your buddies, and instead of having a Left 4 Dead experience, it's almost like a Gauntlet-style experience, which I'm pretty stoked about. The PlayStation blog has announced it this week. It's pretty cool.
I like stupid fun games like that, but zombies are getting played out.
Yeah, really overkill,
so to speak.
It's a new World War II shooter.
Yeah, you're right.
Anybody care about Microsoft's magic wand? Their Wiggle,
no. Only if Jay Allard is attached to it, and he is. Yep. Go Jay.
I don't care.
Don't care either.
Yeah, pass. let's talk about Hideo's weird thing. Hideo's been doing some sort of bizarre countdown over on. It's a Kojima Productions website where it's just been whipping fanboys into a frenzy for about a week now. And then when the counter ticked down, it's just a gray screen that has a field and some clouds. And when the counter ticked down, it reset to a higher number. And apparently some people have been going through the JavaScript code, realized that Hideo has this design to do it five times. Slightly releasing more information each time until the final counter ticks down at, I think it's Microsoft's press conference at E3 on April 1st or something.
Five times.
People have been saying a Raiden thing. There's some sort of lightning reference here. Nobody knows. Hideo's taunting people. There's a big five on the site right now, and it just basically says, new game a coming.
Yeah.
Might be Metal Gear 5. I hope it's not Metal Gear Solid 5 starring Raiden, but we'll see.
It is. I guarantee it is.
Here's something I'm a little more interested about. They released an Aliens vs. Predator teaser trailer for the new AVP game. As a person who sunk a whole lot of time into the old AVP, I'm really hoping they do it upright. There's not much to go on right now, but that's nice.
I saw that too, and I wanted to bring this up. Beige, you and I and Fiend were all kids when Aliens came out. And if you would have announced this game like back in the late 80s or early 90s, I would have been extremely fired up about it. But now they've retarded the Aliens franchise so much that anytime I see anything Aliens related, I'm like completely flaccid over it.
You're done.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. I think the one thing that I was a little stoked about was the alien like Colonial Marines RPG that they were considering. That sounded pretty cool, but then they put that on hold. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of over, especially when you see the Aliens vs. Predator movie. Oh my God, that's a slap in the face.
And then, it's what the fan base always wanted: aliens fighting predators.
I guess, but yeah, but they were 15 years too late though when they dropped that thing, you know. I don't know.
Oh, just because they want it doesn't mean it's a good idea.
It's true. Although right. crawling around on a bug as a bug is always fun. So, yeah. Monkey Island was spotted briefly on Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah.
The Secret of Monkey Island. It wasn't actually on the arcade. It was on a ratings site, German ratings board. It listed it as a special edition, and it has been yanked since that showed up. So make of that what you will. I've played Monkey Island lots of times. Probably wouldn't rebuy it if it came to Xbox Live Arcade, but if the adventure genre was to migrate to a sort of downloadable platform, that would be great.
Yeah.
Let's see. Younger Lara Croft will star in the reboot of a new Tomb Raider franchise. Didn't they just reboot this franchise? Anybody care? I love Tomb Raider Legend, so, you know, I'm willing to see the series be relevant again, but I think it's a little early for a total reboot.
Oh, I read that story. I thought they were talking about the movie.
Yeah, that's what I thought they were talking about. We may be off, but...
Yeah. Okay, huh. Well, let's...
Well, Angelina
Which I
Jolie
also
is...
don't care about.
Yeah, I also don't care either. But, I mean, Angelina Jolie, I'm sure, is going to ask way too much money. And she's too busy, you know, beating the shit out of Brad Pitt nowadays. So,
let's talk about something we all do care about. Who watched the Trico demo?
I did.
The trailer.
Yeah. I watched it right before we recorded. And it's very Ico-ish with a creepy dog eagle.
Rat chihuahua thing that's about 9,000 tons. Yeah, I saw it and I wanted to high-five the Ico team. It looks great, in my opinion.
I think that the creature is really cool and really well done. I think the kid's face and hair looks really weird and really out of place.
I get the impression that wasn't a finished build that hit But it looks like they've combined the sort of emotional resonance of Ico with the big-ass things element of Shadow of the Colossus, and that totally works for me.
Yeah.
So plus the you know, expressiveness on that thing is just amazing. So if you haven't watched that trailer yet, go do it. Let's see. Oh, this thing about Microsoft and the cheaters is interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So Microsoft found everybody who's been cheating on Xbox Live had their points, their gamer score set to 0. By Microsoft, and not only that, apparently they're going to flag people's gamer cards with some kind of big red cheater sticker on the front of it, which I think is poetic justice of a kind. It wouldn't make any difference to my own life if Microsoft set my gamer score to 0, but maybe that's a big deal to some people.
Why not just change all their gamer tags, be like douchebag 1, douchebag 2?
The problem is that's already their gamer tags, so they'd have to, you know.
Oh, man.
Justice for Microsoft. That's nice.
Yeah.
Suda51 possibly working with Square to create some presumably crazy-ass RPG.
Random encounters?
I wasn't thrilled with No More Heroes, but, you know, if you want to inject some different DNA into the Square stable, he's probably a good choice. As long as he gets creative license, who knows? I think he needs to be like a David Lynch, Mark Frost kind of pairing where... Twin Peaks could only have happened if you had the crazy person restrained by the more reasonable person. But
yeah.
I'm willing to see something good come out of that. Bunch of stuff happening in Guitar Hero 5. Anybody care about the idea that you can drop in and out of songs within the instrument and reset stuff on the fly and you have upgrades to the studio? I'm pretty much done with Guitar Hero unless they change things. I'll keep playing guitar games.
I actually think that their new art style is pretty cool. It looks like they're going more towards the Rock Band aesthetic. But I mean, when I see like the song list, it's just completely lame. I'm not interested at all anymore. And I really think that them continuing to make these discs, these standalone discs of Guitar Hero and all these spinoffs, it's got to be saturated. I mean, the market's got to be saturated with this stuff now. I mean, I don't think Mom and Dad are going to buy Little Jimmy another freaking Guitar Hero World Tour set next Christmas. You know, they've already got enough stuff.
You say that, but they also announced this week Drum King. Not only Drum King, Rolling Stone Drum King. Now your son's a drummer.
God,
so
I know.
What do you think about this?
I think that I'm not going to let him look at this at all. I think if he brings it home, I'm going to burn it. No, I'm just kidding. I looked at it when I first saw it. I'm like, oh, this might be cool. But it's for the Wii, and it's going to be using the Wii and the nunchuck as drumsticks. So it's going to be like that Wii music thing. So I can't imagine it being really accurate. And plus, I don't think Alex would really like air drumming and not actually hitting something, because you're missing that tactile feel. And I don't know. This doesn't sound. And not only that, but all the songs are covers. They're all inspired by the artists. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to bring your A game if you're going to compete in the music game world these days.
Oh,
and yes. I think this will die Rock Revolution's death very quickly.
Yeah, agreed.
Anybody playing Quake Live?
Nope.
No. Okay. They're getting a new map every week for 6 weeks.
And
awesome. Yay.
Have fun, Quake players.
Something called Crimecraft Beta is open. And a criminal MMO, if you care. I had theorized last week that maybe Blizzard's undisclosed MMO would be something along this vein, but I don't
Please
really care.
No. Please no. Leave
for some
that.
Reason, I was thinking Blizzard's new game is going to be like in the 30s. Like, I don't know. Hey, Kappa. I don't know. That was the thought that I had in my head.
You know, that might actually be good. Like, if they did something like that in the style of the old Batman cartoon, like noir kind of cell shaded stuff.
Yeah.
That might be interesting. There's already a lot of superhero games on the market, though, including Champions, which is now delayed to September the 1st. I didn't.
Yeah.
Random bit of news. Team Ninja's making more Ninja Gaiden games. Whatever.
Oh.
I didn't realize Itagaki was still around, but okay.
I don't think he's not with Tecmo anymore. Oh, Team Ninja. I'm sorry. Yeah, Team Ninja. Right. Yep. Different.
Yeah,
I'm surprised they own Team. I'm surprised they own the Ninja Gaiden IP.
Yeah, me too.
Anybody watch the Muscle March demo? This is Tecmo's sort of hard gay bizarre.
What?
I have no idea what you're talking
okay.
about.
I can't.
I'm fairly happy I don't.
Yeah, yeah. It's a Katamari Damacy. Okay, you know, Tecmo seems to have discovered that really weird games can sometimes make them money. So they're making this game that involves sweaty, muscly guys with lots of rainbows and flying pigs and cows. It looks kind of like a cross between Cho'Anki and, like, Katamari. It's called Muscle March. Look it up if that's the kind of thing you want to see. It's, you know, the trailer is a thing to behold, but it doesn't translate to radio very well. So,
yeah,
those who are looking for some shiny, colorful, hard gay stuff, there you go.
Okay.
Now, some interesting. That Walmart. Have you seen this thing about them testing the video game buyback kiosks?
I did
Walmart,
see that.
Yeah. What do you think about that? They're beta testing in 77 different stores, basically kiosks where you walk up, stick your old games into the machine. The game, they read it to make sure that you're not sticking in a 50-cent bulletproof or something, and then they give you store credit for it.
How do they know? Like, how do they know I'm not dumping all my old, you know, CDs that I found in there, you know, on a Dangerous Toys disc or something?
I don't know. There must be some sort of database or internet, you know, IMDb kind of thing that it connects up to. I really don't understand why this is there. Like, is it just too expensive to pay a human to trade? Do your trade for you?
How much would it cost to have one kid behind a counter going, "I can take your trade, sir"? Really, it's not like they pay their people that well.
Yeah. Well, I hate Walmart. Like,
as do I.
Yeah, I hate them. But anything that I see that helps take a chunk out of GameStop's little used game empire is just frosting on the cake.
I have a little bit of news here about GameStop. Apparently they posted reasonable profits last year, but are preparing their bottom line for a big loss eventually. So it seems like they may have become self-actualized as to their fate.
I hope so. Yeah, it's just a matter of time. I mean, I think there are three big players in the used game market. There's GameStop, there's Game Crazy, which is a Hollywood Video spinoff, and Amazon. And I think that Game Crazy, I've seen comparisons between all three, and they're all very close, but Game Crazy tends to give you more credit than all the rest of them. But Amazon, you get to buy whatever you want from the Amazon store with it, which is fantastic. I mean, you can buy a Barbie doll when you trade in all your games if you want, you know? So,
and who hasn't contemplated that?
Right. Veen hasn't. Right?
Veen has not.
Well, okay, I got one last one. Apparently more Americans now play games than go to the movies, says the NPD group.
Not surprising.
53% of Americans went to see a movie in the last 6 months, and 63% of them sat down to play a video game. I wouldn't say that signals, you know, death knell for the industry, but it's an interesting fact.
Yeah.
You mean we haven't finally won over movies?
One, we've seen movies ground under our heel.
It is
no
time
more movies
to play
ever.
A victory.
Victory, yeah no. I don't know.
I think it was Tycho. Penny O'K did the strip this week about the console wars. Yeah, I'm pretty much over it.
Anybody else got any other news? Otherwise, we're done.
Yeah. I got a couple things I want to throw out here real quick. I just saw this today at Kotaku. They said that Warner Brothers offers to buy most of Midway. So I would imagine Warner Brothers is going to spend $21,000 and own Midway here pretty soon. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, did you? I mean, if you read the whole article,
it's $33 million that they're offering to buy for. So basically, what is Midway? It's Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, what is Midway? Like, I was
Ballers,
like,
and
PsyOps. I guess that IP is going really far.
No, that was actually a squad mission because it never sold. So
yeah,
they're paving the way for Mortal Kombat versus DC versus Warner Brothers characters.
But I mean, the Mortal Kombat, I mean, Midway milked that franchise for everything that it's worth. I don't think that you can continue milking it. You know, I mean, Mortal Kombat had to, you know, enlist DC to throw in their characters into the ring so they could make some money off the franchise. I don't think that you can take it much further. I mean,
they should go back to making pinball machines. That's what I think. Midway was cooler when they just made pinball.
And you know what? Let me ask you guys this. Do you ever look, okay, I remember when Mortal Kombat first came out, and the promise of having a really, like, violent and gory game was very appealing to me at the time, but they've taken it, and they've went so cartoony with it that it's like, so tongue-in-cheek that the gore is gone, the gore aspect. What is wrong? How come we haven't seen a realistic, bloody, like, brutal, I mean, almost like a thrill kills style game come out, you know, where
it's called
where
Mad
it's...
World, and it exists, but it just makes you, after you play through it, it makes you want Heavy Rain all that much more, or Alan Wake. Okay. That's my impression of it.
Okay, I mean, it's not that I'm dying for that kind of game now, but I mean, when I was 16, I would have really got into it, you know?
I don't know, I don't think violence is in the way that it was in the heyday of Duke Nukem and fatalities.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I think it also has to do with the kind of companies that are making fighting games these days.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Good point.
I think Manhunt scared everybody off, too. I mean, they put a game out that just... Who wants to go through that trouble, really?
Yeah.
Who wants to deal with it?
I'm with you. Got a couple more things here. I did want to show... Kotaku said that Metal Gear Solid and Resident Evil PS1 classics are incoming to the PSN. Looks like Sony's serious about adding PS1 classics to the store as a few heavy hitters appear to be en route. ESRB has rated 5 new games, the 2 that I just mentioned, plus Spec Ops Covert Assault, Spec Ops Ranger Elite, what the hell is that? And Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six, which actually just came out today. So, so maybe this is a good sign.
Good for them. I just put their old back catalog online. I think we're all agreed.
Yeah. Do it.
Download Sony games.
Do it. Got a couple more quick things here. Kotaku said that they got a letter, a cease and desist letter for some Taiwanese lawyers about the PS3 Slim photos that they showed.
Which means it's real?
What's that?
It means it's real?
Yeah, well, but they didn't say it was Sony. It wasn't Sony that was doing it, so they were holding off until they heard from Sony officially. So does anybody really think that this is going to happen this year, or is this a complete Photoshop fake?
I don't know. I already have my PS3. I'm not sure the thin factor makes a big difference. If it's $100 less, that will.
Yeah.
Is there anybody who went to the store with $400 in their pocket to buy a PS3 and was like, ooh, it's kind of chubby. Never mind.
No. No. Not going to happen. That's
yeah,
odd.
So who cares?
All right. And then last but not least, this is really interesting. So has everybody seen the Tony Hawk Ride controller, and have they been reading about this at all?
Well, this is that skateboard thing. Yeah. I glanced at it.
Unless it actually flies, I'm not interested.
You can look like an idiot in your living room. Yeah, no.
Well, not only that, this is crazy. So apparently, this is the controller for the game, and in order, there's a setting on the game where everything that the board does, your character can do. So literally, if you want to pull off a 360 kickflip, you have to do it on this board. So if anybody can do that already, aren't they really going to be skateboarding for real?
Yeah.
It's like if they made a basketball peripheral that every way that you bounce that basketball happened in real time.
Yeah. Go do that at the freaking mall and impress a girl. Yeah. To impress a girl, not your mom, you know?
I don't really see the market, but you know, crazier peripherals have sold. That's all I'm saying.
I think this is really going to bomb horribly.
I see a lot of TVs getting destroyed. That's my prediction on it.
And then I'm sorry, I do have one last thing. It's not about a video game, but it's something I did want to bring up. There is a webcomic that most of you probably know about. It's called PvP, and PvP Online has been running for over 10 years now, and it kind of started as a video game culture-based strip, and it's since evolved. But the PvP Awesomeology just got announced, and if you buy it through the PvP store, you can get it for $85 as opposed to $100 when it lands on Amazon. It's basically a 600-page omnibus of the all the strips that appeared online from 98 through 05 is all collected in one big massive hardcover volume. I'm going to pick this up because I love PvP. It's one of those strips that I read for a long time and then I kind of fell off, and then I picked it back up. I started following it again like last year, and man, Scott Kurtz is bringing it. I mean, this strip is really good. It's been like consistently good.
Yep. I am a PvP fan off and on. I haven't been following it lately, but I did follow it at the point where, he decided that it was dumb that his characters hadn't aged for, a couple of years, and he just had the two younger kids have sex with each other and each grow a year.
They that leveled was great.
Up. Yeah.
So,
that's pretty awesome.
It is. I wanted to bring this up because I had brought this up to Rampant one day. I was talking about it. She's like, yeah, I read it for a while, but I haven't read it in a while. But I encourage anyone who's read it in the past that hasn't read it in a while, go read it again. It's really good. He's just started adding color to it, so they just really look sharp. And if you're a comic nerd like me, you'll really appreciate it.
I read a lot of my web comics in print form, actually, so I wish more would do it.
Yeah. So news, that's it for news.
That's it.
That's a lot of news.
That is. They had to pick the week that all the E3 stuff dropped. So, yeah. Game of the Year 2000. We were all playing games there then, yes.
It's a good year.
Yep.
I'll start.
Okay.
Actually, do you want me to take the reins and I'll just run down the list and you guys can
sure.
go?
I'll fill in some stuff.
All right, here's the list I'm looking at. I'm gonna just grab the ones that I think are important. Resident Evil, Code Veronica.
Played it, enjoyed it.
This was the game that I played and realized that I was over Resident Evil.
Oddly, this was the game that I played and realized I liked Resident Evil.
Yeah, I played it as part of a giant... I had never played any of the Resident Evils until my wife moved up here, and we sat down and played them in chronological order. And I think I remember up until, unless you count 4 as part of the initial canon, Resident Evil Veronica being my favorite of these sort of tank control iterations of it. So.
Agreed.
Okay.
Thief 2, The Metal Age, came
Loved
out
it.
In 2000.
There's a shame title. I mean, like, it didn't really sell, but those who like it a lot. It's everything that was good about Thief plus steampunk. So, plus it had a really awesome final confrontation, and the last level was great. So, I really hope someday we'll do a Thief squad mission, and that, like, if that ever releases on good old games, and we'll have a real excuse to just play that series. And now that Thief 4 has been announced... It's not outside the realm of the pale. So
yeah, and apparently it has aged really well too. Apparently it still plays good.
It plays good. It looked bad when it first launched. It probably still looks bad. But
yeah,
you get over graphics really fast. 10 minutes.
A game I've never understood the appeal of, Perfect Dark, came out in 2000.
I understand the appeal just because I was a major GoldenEye fan, and this was done by the team that made GoldenEye, so I was really excited for it. Here's something that really bothered me about Perfect Dark. It came with this... did it come with the expansion pack, the memory expansion, or did you have to buy it separately?
I know Donkey Kong Country, or Donkey Kong 64 came with the pack. I don't remember if Perfect Dark did.
I'm pretty sure it came with it.
Well, the thing is that if you did not use that expansion pack, the game was unplayable. It ran at like 3 frames per second. It was horrible. So, but if you put that little expansion card in there, and if you shrunk the resolution to where you were literally playing it in like a box that wasn't the full screen, it ran really smoothly. So
awesome.
It was really gimped. And it bothered me so much, and the color palette was really dark, so I couldn't really tell what was going on, and I was really disappointed by it.
Okay.
But it reviewed well.
A game near and dear to my heart, Legend of Dragoon for the PS1.
I never played it. It's a shooter, right?
No, it's an RPG. It was Sony's answer to Final Fantasy.
Yep, right.
This was going to be their Final Fantasy VII that they owned from scratch. It's an interesting game.
Really?
Yeah, how'd that work out for them?
Well, there is no Legend of Dragoon 2.
Right.
It was badly localized, first of all, so you played the entire game and had no idea what was going on. The biggest thing I can say about this game is it has become shorthand for me for a game that goes on too long.
Oh, okay.
Does it have ice dungeon and a fire dungeon?
No, it doesn't. No, it does have a tower you have to climb to rescue somebody. And it was, I think probably the unique thing about it was one of the first games where in the middle of the turn-based battles, there were things to do at certain times, almost like what Last Remnant does now.
Hmm.
You had to hit certain buttons at certain times. I was ready for it to be over, and it stubbornly went on well past probably an extra 10 hours.
Hmm. Okay.
All right, now we get some of the heavy hitters. Deus Ex 2000.
Yes, sir.
Never played it.
I don't know if it'll be game of the year, but it should be. If the squad was choosing, and I guess we are. Deus Ex, like...
I loved it. It's not going to get my vote because I know what it is just looking at the list, but... I loved it. It was the very beginning of that game when you had a choice of how to kind of get in that cell in the Statue of Liberty and rescue, and you could smoke the guy out. That's when you realized I'm doing something I haven't done in Doom and Quake and all those.
Yep, it was a stealth FPS role-playing inventory management dialogue hybrid. It was one of those kitchen sink games that had all sorts of War Inspector good stuff in it, and it's creepily, creepily prescient. Have any of you guys played it post 9/11?
No, but I know what you're talking about now when I think about it.
Terrorists attack New York City, FEMA pulls in, government cracks down on civil liberties, etc., etc. If they pull a huge UNATCO hidden base out from under some sort of place in Washington these days, I wouldn't be at all surprised. It's eerie. I mean, the trade towers aren't even in Deus Ex because they were written in as having been destroyed in a terrorist attack earlier.
Wow.
So it would be very difficult to make this game now. In fact, I'm almost certain that you couldn't do it because the political climate in the States has way shifted since before 2000 when this was released. But I mean, they bring everything into it, the Illuminati, the Trilateral Commission, and it's heavy on the philosophy and the dialogue. Like, it's one of the few games I can think of where I've had an actual like philosophical conversation with an entity in game and actually sort of been talking philosophy with them. That doesn't happen in very many games, but it did in Deus Ex.
It's a terrific game.
Yep. Every game of the year 2000 by a lot of places, and definitely should be on everyone's pile of shame.
And the reason it didn't sell better was because 4 days later Diablo 2 came out.
Can we actually not talk about Diablo 2?
No argument from me. I'm not a Diablo fan.
Really? I'm not either.
I was disgustingly addicted to that.
I was in 2000. Yeah, doesn't really hold any magic appeal for me now, but I played it through with a couple of character classes, and I enjoyed my necromancer. So, yeah, it's good stuff. Clicky, clicky.
No, I don't argue the goodness of it. I just...
Have any of you guys played Stat... I think it's called Stat Builder. It's the game that runs in a browser, and you just click a button in the middle of the screen that says click here, like 100 times to level up. And every time you click, like, there's a random, like, 2% chance that your strength will go up. You have a whole character sheet in front of you, but there's no game. There's just a big red button that says click here. And there's
a Diablo.
Yeah, there's a high score list of people who've leveled up their characters in Stat Builder to like ungodly levels of 99999 strength with a +5 blazing sword of whoop ass. But yeah, it's Diablo 2.
Basically it's just somebody just wrote a batch file that constantly clicks their mouse button or whatever.
Right.
So
okay.
Yeah. I'm just saying that Diablo 2 has just been talked to death. Everybody kind of knows about it. It's kind of like talking about Mario, you know.
And I did not realize this, but on the same day as Diablo 2, Icewind Dale was released.
I never played it.
It's the only Infinity Engine one that I did not play.
Okay, here's what you need to know about Icewind Dale, because I did play it through. It was the first game at that time, and the first, and still to this day, only Infinity Engine game that I had to back the difficulty down to easy.
Wow.
It was difficult to the point of being unfair.
That's a shame.
Honestly, in retrospect, it's kind of somewhere in between Diablo and Baldur's Gate. It does not have as deep a plot and story as Baldur's Gate. I remember liking it.
It was an action game, though, right? It wasn't really an RPG.
No, it was an RPG. It was a straight-up RPG.
Oh, really?
It just didn't have the same depth. It was kind of almost like a dungeon crawler version. None of the dungeons were random. Everything was planned out, and there was a story. It was missing something. I mean, it was probably missing BioWare, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because okay. I think that was just Interplay did that one. I don't care about Homeworld, so I'm doing this list so I can skip it.
George is going to hate you.
Yeah, whatever. It's not even the real one.
It's Homeworld 2.
Cataclysm.
Anyway. We did Homeworld.
Cares.
Right.
Japanese releases, so Final Fantasy IX.
Yeah.
Go ahead and hate on it.
No, I'm not one of my favorites. Yeah, I'm not
really
going to hate on it. I'm not in the camp that loves it for its old school roots, but I think it was a fine, if you don't count the fact that the ending is completely nonsense.
I don't even remember the ending.
There you go. But yeah, it was one of these forgettable final bosses, and that's always a shame in a Square RPG.
I don't remember what happened when it came out, but I remember renting it and playing it through maybe 2 or 3 hours and realizing it was just another Final Fantasy game, and I just kind of gave up on it. And I don't know if it was because I was playing something else at the time, and I hadn't been burned out of the Final Fantasy games at this point. I know that I was disappointed by 7 and 8, so maybe that's why I didn't get back into the Final Fantasy series until 10, and actually didn't like any of them past that either, but I don't know.
I loved 7, hated 8, loved 9. Go figure.
10 was my first.
Yeah, 10 was great.
You are young.
I am young.
I am young
on this podcast.
1 was my first. And there you go.
Actually, 1 would have been my first, but I didn't play it. My nerd friend did. And I was like, what are you playing, fag?
Nerd, yeah.
But then later on, I was like, oh, no, that's the coolest thing ever. So he was right, I was wrong. Let's see, Chrono Cross came out in 2000, the much maligned Chrono Cross.
Never played it, but I understand that you kill, basically, if anything you liked existed from Chrono Trigger, then you end up killing it in Chrono Cross.
You know, I think this game would have been better served if they hadn't had the word Chrono in it.
Yeah.
If it had just been Fantasy Cross or whatever.
Yeah.
It would have been
Destiny's Balls or whatever they would have called it. Because they're... I'm trademarking that. Don't go make that some company. There's a good game in there. It's fun. The problem I had with that game is you always had the feeling of I'm missing something. Because they designed it for replayability. There's something like 30 characters. And if you have certain characters in your party, certain things happen. And so you always kind of had the guilt of, oh, if I do this, I'm going to miss that. And I don't know if that bothers everybody else as much as it bothers me.
I'm a completionist. But I usually have my wife riding shotgun on the GameFAQs on a laptop, so I don't tend to miss much in collectible.
But But it was the kind of thing where you would have had to go back and redo the entire thing in order to see other parts.
Oh, F that. I've never played through Chrono Cross or Chrono Trigger multiple times to see different endings. So,
This wasn't even different endings. This would have been different middles.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
Yeah. I did like it. I think there's kind of a cool twist towards the end. But as far as relation to Chrono Trigger, there's almost none. All right. Dragon Quest VII, anybody?
Nope. Didn't play it.
Sorry. Okay, moving on. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2.
Loved it. My favorite of the series. Loved that game.
I've never played a Tony Hawk game.
Me either. So, Rock, what?
What? Oh, my God.
It was fantastic. It added manuals.
Skaters, we're from New Jersey. What do you want? We don't do skating.
I'm killing.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm from Montreal. It's we're snowed in like 8 months of the year. I don't skate.
Yeah, well, okay.
THPS2 was great.
Yeah, let me tell you about the appeal. I've never been able to skate. I'm not coordinated that way, but I've always loved the skating culture. I love the music, you know, the art, all that kind of stuff, and this game really nailed it. The soundtrack to this game was incredible. I loved pretty much all the songs on this game. The maps were just perfectly sized. They weren't like, Tony Hawk or Pro Skater 3 was the first of the series to really just blow it up and make these huge freaking maps, which is where they lost it for me, is when they just got so out of control that
it was
they were
too
just,
easy.
Yeah, well, there was too much stuff to do, and I don't want that. Give me a nice confined space, and it was the kind of game where you booted it up. And you just hung out, you listened to the music, you messed around with some tricks, you tried to do a better chain than you did the last game, and it was just a really, like, for me, it was like a very zen type of game where I could just kind of get in the zone and relax and just focus on the game, and I just really, really enjoyed it. And I still actually have, it's one of the four PS1 games that I actually still own. And I just won't. I'll never play it again. But I have to keep it on my shelf because I loved it so much. I played so much of it. Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Any other Tony Hawk stuff?
No, I'm not. I'm not throwing my head in that ring.
Okay. My pick for game of the year 2000: Baldur's Gate 2: Shadows of Aum.
I'm with you. I'm not sure it would get my vote, but I played it and loved it. Yeah, my love affair with Baldur's Gate 2 is well documented. I don't think I need to.
You carry Jahira in your wallet?
I know. Once upon a time, I did, and that was a joke from a friend who laminated a collectible card that he got out of a box for me. Yeah, I had a thing for Jahira.
If there's a game does everything right, I mean, Baldur's Gate 1 has a lot of problems, and they fixed all of them.
Plus, and strongholds. Strongholds, romances. That was the first time I'd seen that in the video game. What else did they do right?
Minskinboo.
Minskinboo.
Yeah.
Minskinboo.
An epic. I mean, epic scope.
Huge. Yeah, it was long ass. I don't want to say 200 hours, but I don't want to not say 200 hours either. That might have been on the back of the box, but I know that I was unemployed at the time, recently graduated university, and I just played it to death. The way that some people play WoW these days. So.
Baldur's Gate 2 is the game that people our age look at and identify with BioWare. So if BioWare comes out with anything, Baldur's Gate 2 is like the first thing that pops into our brain, and we'll just buy whatever they bring out, you know?
Agreed. It's great.
Yeah.
Although it did introduce something to video games that still to this day bugs me, there's this epic quest going on, and everything's very, very important that you have to get to because otherwise somebody's going to take over the land and destroy everything. But you can run some errands for
some people
first.
Quick, go to this little side quest and do it. Yeah, I don't know how long JRPG's been doing that for a while, but yeah, Baldur's Gate was endemic for it. Right, you had a quest list a mile long, and by the time you actually got back to fighting John Irenicus, you had no idea who he was or what he was supposed to be doing.
You're like, Imowyn's being held hostage, probably tortured. She'll keep.
Yeah.
Okay. American McGee's Alice. Cricket.
I played it. I enjoyed it. It was cool for the time. Not much else to say about it. I think American McGee's ridden it far too long as some sort of feather in his cap.
The fact that he still gets his name above the title is crazy to me.
It's only because his name is American McGee.
I guess so.
If it was Joe Smith, no one would care.
He tried to play it off during this interview once. I heard it on a podcast that somebody interviewed him for that one episodic game he made for GameTap. What was it? Grim. Yeah, and they were asking him, like, why do they put your name on it? And he's like, well, the marketers think that it's a good idea, and I don't really care, and yada yada.
Right.
Whatever.
Or it's in your little ego contract.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Pokemon Gold and Silver, somebody else has to talk about that.
Well, the people that would talk about it are not here.
They're in Disney
World.
Yeah.
Hi.
Scribble.
I'm not one of those guys who is still buying Pokemon. But it was definitely a fad when I was in like elementary school and stuff. And Gold and Silver were at this sort of they were at the nice little peak before like it exploded with the next versions, and they had like over 300. You know, Gold and Silver for me was sort of at this place where, you know, you knew all the Pokemon names, and you was still small enough to understand everything, and they had that nice gesture of basically including the whole land from Red and Blue and stuff in there. I mean, I'm not like putting it forward as a candidate this year, but I mean, it was, a lot of people say it was the best in the series.
Okay. I'll give you that.
All right. Command & Conquer Red Alert 2.
Enjoyable.
Widely regarded as one of the better Command & Conquer games.
Red Alert 2.
Yeah.
My favorite RTS. Camera.
Really?
Yeah. Ever. I think so. RA3 doesn't quite hold up, but Red Alert 2, just the humor, the story. Okay, funny story. I was in probably, what, this came out in 2000. I was 11. I remember I used to play Red Alert 1 with a friend, and in like grade school, we were talking about World War II, and I was completely lost because I didn't really pay attention to the story in Red Alert, which is, for those of you who don't know, is that Einstein goes back in time and kills Hitler.
Sweet.
So that,
why wouldn't
yeah.
he?
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, nice. Einstein discovers time travel, and he goes back in time and kills Hitler so that the Germany never rises as like a great power, and instead you have the Soviet Union to fight. But yeah, so I played a ton of Red Alert and didn't really know the story. I just knew that I was the Allies against the Soviet Union, and so when World War II came up in like grade 5 or something, or probably earlier, I want to hope that I wasn't naive at that point, but I raised my hand and I was like, wait, wasn't Germany part of the Allies? Didn't we
Didn't we fight the Russians with our
Tesla cannons? Didn't we have that?
Remember when Einstein went back in time? Right?
Anyway. I just got stairs. It was great. Yeah.
That's
there was
awesome.
One other gamer in the room that was like, high five!
Wait. He's slow.
We're
going to
call your parents,
down.
Mr. Ostrin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
Very,
never played it.
Very interesting Zelda game.
Another game you had to play with a guide.
Yeah, and apparently it just released on Virtual Console.
Yep. So it did.
I've never played it, couldn't really care less, but yeah, it's supposed to be good, apparently.
It's definitely the most experimental of the Zelda games, and I liked it a lot. It's Zelda crossed with Groundhog Day. So you keep rewinding time over and over again until the world isn't destroyed, and you keep replaying days, and you can do weird time-based stuff where you, like... because you know something is going to happen at noon on the second day, you can be precisely in position to catch the thief or whatever on that time, and that will create cascades sort of through the time stream. It's very hard to explain, but really neat. Okay. I wish they would be as experimental with future Zelda games.
Next, Tekken Tag Tournament, an idea that sounded good at the time.
Yeah. Next.
Next.
Moving on. Escape from Monkey Island.
Arguably the least popular of the series.
Well, I don't know if they just needed to use that Grim Fandango engine one more time or what, but the game did not translate well to 3D.
And Guybrush, it wasn't that it was bad. It was just that it didn't really, Guybrush didn't really work in that medium. Like, I played it. I enjoyed it. The jokes were funny. The First Church of LeChuck reformed or whatever, you know. The recurring gag where every time Guybrush uses the banana picker, which is like five times in the game, he says, wow, I didn't expect to use this item again. And he keeps saying, wow, this banana picker's really handy. So they're playing with adventure game conventions there. Yeah, it's good stuff. They just, you know, it's kind of like the least of a good thing.
The thing I remember about that game is that the end was bunk.
Yeah.
Last battle, or however you did it with LeChuck, was just almost action gamey in a way, and it was just really kind of crappy.
But it was cool that you got to see the Guybrush Elaine marriage dynamic.
Yes,
which I
there was a lot to like in the game. It just if they had made Curse of Monkey Island Part 2, I think I'd have been happier.
Yeah.
Huh? No One Lives Forever.
Yes.
First squad missions.
Love it.
Yes, I love it.
I never played it.
It's okay. Yeah, you should if you get the chance. It's the funniest first-person shooter ever made.
It's very good. It has a tools of personality, and it holds up really well even years later.
I think I owned it. I just think I never got around to playing it.
Yeah, same.
I think I got it with a joystick or something.
Dig it up.
Yeah, dig it up.
A game that a lot of people have a lot of love for, Skies of Arcadia.
Mm-hmm. Not me.
My wife does. I appreciate it for what it did. I like the characters. I didn't ever play through it. I'm not one of the huge Skies fanboys, but I have kind of looked over her shoulder as she's been playing. Exploring around as a pirate, really cool. I like that pirateness is a stat, basically the only stat that you have in the game. So for determining your rating. So you don't always have to take the brave and heroic lawful good response to things. You have to take whatever response gets you the most pirateness, which is sometimes running away, it's sometimes shooting people in the back, it's sometimes swashbuckling. It's good.
I played it beginning to end, all the way through, remember almost nothing about it.
Yeah, it has a good soundtrack.
I enjoyed it. Move on.
Yeah, I like that the characters come back in Valkyria Chronicles.
Oh, yeah, that almost made me play longer than a half hour of Valkyria Chronicles. Almost. The Longest Journey came out in 2000.
Also a squad mission. Wow, a lot of squad missions this year. Fantastic.
Great game.
Great game, yep. Yeah. Awesome game.
This was one of those years where the PC was still a dominant platform, and there was so much good stuff that a lot of things just fell off the wayside.
I'm pretty sure this is the year I bought a PlayStation 2, and up until that point in time, I'd only been on PC. And the PS2 was very underused that year. It was just PC. It might have been the next year, but
it
was very close to
year.
This. I was playing Baldur's Gate 2 at that time. So.
I should have played Longest Journey then, but never did. I played it a couple years later. Cool game. A lot of cursing in that game. That's one of the things I remember.
Yep.
Banjo Tooie. Yeah.
Another big N64 collectathon.
Collectathon, Blurfest.
Mm.
Never was a fan of the Banjo games. Kind of had grown out of Rare at that point.
Yeah.
And then the last game that I feel like mentioning is Grandia 2 on the Dreamcast came out. Still one of my favorite battle systems in a role-playing game to this day.
Isn't it just kind of slash in
No, it was very timing-based. That there was like there were bars going across the screen and you had to make things happen at certain times, and it was kind of combined with the active time battle where if you did something you had to wait, but you were engaged in every battle. The story was junk. It was very very JRPG. You kind of waited around for the moments where they sat around the campfire and talked. I don't remember anything about the plot, anything about the characters, but I do remember liking the battle system. Not game of the year, though.
No.
Anything else we need to add before we move on?
Go, Rocky. Yeah.
No, okay. I just wanted to go over a few that you had missed. The Sims came out this year.
Yeah, I was going to throw The Sims out. I think we'd be pretty remiss if we didn't mention it, because it is kind of important in the land of gaming.
It is. It's the game that brought the casual gamer to the PC gaming platform. You know, this was the one. This was the game. This was the Wii of 2000. You know, this was the one that all your girlfriends and your mom would play, and you would call. You know, your aunt would call you for, you know, Christmas, asking you what you wanted for Christmas, and you said, "Yeah, I want to get a video game." And she's, "Oh, I like video games too. I play The Sims."
So the only reason I skipped it is because I don't think it's a game.
It's not. It's a sim.
Do you think SimCity is a game?
I do not.
Okay.
It's
actually SimCity is more of a game than The Sims is.
It kind of falls into the Harvest Moon category of a game that's work, which to me is not a game. But yeah. So we've got The Sims. We have Vagrant Story, which is an underappreciated Square game. It was very interesting. It was a third-person, almost tile-based style game. Well, the movement wasn't tile-based, but it seemed like the depending on where you were on the grid depended on how well your weapon hit. And the thing that was so special about the game was that you had customizable weapons, and you had like these thousands and thousands of combinations that you could do. The only problem is that it was one of those games that kind of looked the same all the way through it. And I thought it was really cool and really unique for the first like 5 to 7 hours. But then after that, I was kind of over it. Started getting like super hard, and I kind of gave up on it, but a lot of people swear by it. They really love it. Anybody have a comment about Vagrant Story?
No, I never played it, sadly.
I played the beginning of it. I thought it was ugly, and I stopped.
It is. It's pretty ugly. It was done by the guy who did Final Fantasy XII, and I believe it's set in the same world as Final Fantasy XII. And also Final Fantasy Tactics, maybe?
Well, I don't know. There's about a bazillion games set there.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I'll just say someone will correct me. Also, let's see, Evolva came out, which I never played, but that was pretty. A lot of people like that. Shogun Total War. If you're
I enjoyed
big,
that game. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you're a big Wars sim guy, that was apparently pretty important. Let's see. I did want to. Oh. Here's one that we need to mention because I bet Mike is going to punch his iPod if I don't mention it, but Star Trek Voyager Elite Force came out.
Yep.
And this was like the first-person shooter based in the Star Trek world that was apparently really good.
I remember it being really bad.
I remember Tuvok the Vulcan speaking, and that was it.
Well, this was the bad one? I thought one of them... Which one was the good one?
Every other Star Trek game? I don't know. Is that how it works?
No, that's the movies.
All right. Well, then maybe I'm totally off. Okay.
I could be wrong. I remember most of the Star Trek games being bad, except for Judgment Rights.
Hmm. Interesting. Well,
according to GameSpot, it's an 8.6, so it must have been pretty decent.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that this one did really well, and I think it was surprising because Voyager was kind of lame. Well, I don't know. I can't really speak because I'm not a big Star Trek guy, but... I remember it being a surprising game, and people were trying to push, you know, people to play it. So, finally, it's worth bringing up that Sacrifice also came out, which is another underappreciated one that's available.
I would love to do Sacrifice as a squad mission. I have it sitting here on my shelf. I've never played it. I've heard great things about it.
Yeah, and then MechWarrior 4 Vengeance came out, which I think was the last really good MechWarrior game, and we haven't heard a peep from them since. So,
Is the game of year 2000?
Well, first, hold on. We did get one email submitted from...
We got Sword Guy's, like, giant list of crazy-ass JA games.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to break it down. I'm just going to say he submitted them to me, and he recommends Cannon Spike, which is a, I don't know, Capcom fan service, Mercs-like arcade game. Something called Mars Matrix, crazy vertical shooter that uses only one button. Mega Man Legends 2, somewhere Red Swirl is very excited. Persona 2 Eternal Punishment. We've done enough talking about Persona 2 on this show. Shin Megami Tensei Devil Children, cutesy Mega 10 on the GBC.
Dude, okay. there was a Shin Megami Tensei game that came out every freaking year. I didn't realize that this series was this
The rabbit hole goes deep, yeah. I didn't get into it until Rito Kuzunoha versus the Soulless Army, but
wow.
There's a bunch of stuff.
All right.
Also, Paper Mario came out this year. Who knew? And, oh, he has at the bottom of his email to me, lol, die katana. So, I guess 2000 was John Romero's big year.
He did not make me his bitch.
The fact, no, and I think that's probably why he's not on Game of the Year. Do I have anything on my list that I was going to mention? Nobody said Dead or Alive, too?
No.
On purpose.
That's the only thing I had. I got that game, but.
You know, I got a surprising list from Captain Carnage here. He also brought up Alice. Alice was, I believe he said it was his game of the year. He really loved it. And he said that Elite Force was also really good. So this is probably where I'm remembering the Elite Force. And he also loved Final Fantasy IX. As far as games that we've forgotten, and I can't believe I've forgotten this one. Messiah? Remember this one with the little cherub on
Not
the cover?
Not a good game.
Yeah.
Weird.
I never played it.
Very strange. Probably a good reason why David Perry is working on Facebook games right now.
Yeah.
I've actually got an email. Tolkotos picks are in here, too. He suggests Diablo 2, Final Fantasy 9, Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and Phantasy Star Online, which I guess none of us have mentioned. But somewhere there are people really, really into that game. So
yeah,
it deserves a shout-out.
Okay, I got a couple more. He says Rayman 2. Wasn't that 99?
That was 99.
Okay.
Next.
Breath of Fire 4?
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Decent. You know. It says Earthworm Jim 3D. Oh, he says good example of a game that killed a franchise. Brutal controls and camera doomed this game from the beginning. I do
game
remember
of the year.
Yeah. Done! Oh, yeah, and he also says Marvel vs. Capcom 2, according to Tokoto, the ultimate fighting game. So
He is completely gay for that game.
Yeah, and
he's also not here, so...
Yeah. And another thing, too, this is the fighting game that I would see in the arcades and say, I'm too old now to play 2D fighting games.
Some little kid who could just barely see over the console, you'd look up and, like, Ryu and Zangief and... You know, Captain America would be tag teaming out and pile driving Jill Valentine on the other side. And you're like, wait, I'm done.
Yeah, there's not enough Mountain Dew in the world for me to keep up with those kids.
Yeah. Yep. And
you haven't lived
until
you've been humiliated by one of them at Dance Dance Revolution. Because that happened.
Oh.
To me.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. No, that's good. Got three more quick ones. Real Mist, which
Real
anything
Mist.
Mist, anything Mist related. I know people hate me for this, but anything Mist related, I would be happy in a mist burn fire.
What am I looking for? For me to poop on.
Okay.
Bonfire, that's it. A bonfire made of mist discs. I will probably dance all the way around it all night long. Okay.
You're not in for the Riven mission? No. Okay.
No. Carmageddon TDR 2000. I forgot about this one too. And it wasn't Carmageddon, wasn't this the game that on the box it was a car and there was a guy running for his life because it was getting ready to drive up his ass?
One of the few games that's ever earned an AO rating been banned in England as well. Up until Manhunt, it had the only distinction of being having that under its belt.
Okay.
Yeah, the box art is classy.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you said the boss. Sorry.
No, the box art.
Yeah. And last but not least, Dark Cloud came out. And he said, notable as you were able to build a main village just the way you wanted using items found in the dungeon. Dungeons were also randomly generated. Not sure if this was the first time this was done. Pretty sure that it's not the first time randomly generated dungeons were out, but Dark Cloud kind of set the foundation for Dark Cloud 2, which should be a squad mission in the future.
Dark Cloud 2 was cool, but the randomly generated dungeons were the worst part of it.
Oh,
I get really bored with stuff that just looks like a maze laid out in different configurations. Give me a well-designed environment any day, rather than a randomly designed one. Persona aside.
Okay, so I think we're done.
So is that
we're
it?
We're done with that, so now it's time to vote. Yeah, that's it. So
okay.
We should
unless you want me to really quick explain the appeal of Perfect Dark, because I was snoozing during the just three things. Alt fire, all the guns had two functions.
Oh, okay.
Co-op, and I mean this is from a console shooter perspective, so don't hate on me, PC guys. And I mean it was basically just the multiplayer sequel to GoldenEye.
Yeah,
you know,
and they added bots in multiplayer, which was
sweet. Definitely had the same feel as GoldenEye. You know, like the way that you bobbed through the screen was very similar, and the level design,
And I mean, I've gone back to GoldenEye. I've gone back to GoldenEye multiplayer. It does not hold up whatsoever, but at the time, it was fun.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, so what's it going to be?
All right. What do we do? 1, 2, 3? Everybody say their submission?
Well, why don't we just talk it out? Why don't we just talk? Let's have a group hug, and we'll talk about it.
Okay, it's Baldur's Gate 2, Shadows of Om. Moving on.
My heart's with you, Fiend, but I have to say Deus Ex.
I wouldn't argue too hard with you on that.
You know, The Sims is definitely the most important if we're talking dollars, but Deus Ex is the most... There's never been a game like that, and it won Game of the Year for its intelligence and for its the gameplay that was so hybridized. Like, it's still ahead of its time even now, and the story was just audacious beyond belief then, and it's doubly relevant now. So that would be my vote. Plus, the music kicks ass.
My only problem is that I've never played Deus Ex.
Well, you should.
And I know. I totally should. And you know what? Price isn't an option because I think I can get the thing for like $5 on Steam or something like that. It's always on sale. It's just one of those haven't got around to it. It's a big one on my top 5 shame pile. So
I love Baldur's Gate 2 as well, you know, and if Fiend and I wanted to arm wrestle over it, we could be here all day. But I think, didn't we already have an Infinity Engine sort of game here?
No, last week you talked about Planescape for a while, but it didn't make it.
Well, this is the last chance. It's a difficult call. Scribble, what do you think?
I mean, my heart goes to Red Alert 2, but I was not PC aware this year for a while, so yeah. I kind of have to defer to the judgment of you three gentlemen.
You know, I know how you feel, man, because my heart goes to No One Lives Forever and Pro Skater 2. But I would never vote for them as the game of the year. For me, they were important. And then the thing is with me, and not that I don't even want to say it, but I have to, you know, Diablo 2 is a major contender.
I'm trying not to say that, but he's right. As the games that have endured, it has endured more than either Baldur's Gate 2 or Deus Ex.
Correct.
Right. But I do have to say, I think it's between Deus Ex and Baldur's Gate 2. I think it's between those two.
All right, Beige, you have to pick. Go.
Deus Ex.
Damn it.
Only because Baldur's Gate 2 is 2. And Baldur's Gate had its chance previously. And it really should have won for the year that it came out swinging as the, holy shit, I jump-started the Western RPG genre again. And Baldur's Gate 2 is the definitive one.
The reason why I will not fight this is because, ultimately, Baldur's Gate 2 is a fantasy, elves, dragons, backdrop. So that in and of itself makes it somewhat derivative. Deus Ex is very unique because it was a science fiction espionage done right, and so
it was half thief, half FPS. You know, we've been through the list.
Right. Yeah,
I can't argue too hard. Okay. Deus Ex is a great
Deus
game.
Ex. Deus Ex is here.
All right, here's the list: 86 Zelda, 87 Metal Gear, 88 Mega Man 2, 89 Sim City, 90 Super Mario World, 91 Street Fighter 2, 92 Star Control 2, 93 Myst, 94 Final Fantasy VI, 95 Warcraft 2, 96 Mario 64, 97 Curse of Monkey Island, 98 Half-Life, 99 Counter-Strike, and 2000 Deus Ex.
What? And Baldur's Gate 2.
Wait a second.
This is getting FPS heavy.
Wait a second. They gave Counter-Strike?
Did you listen to the last show?
You know what? That's the one I haven't heard yet.
It came down to quite a discussion, but the Counter-Strike is a very different game at heart than Half-Life was.
The mod scene.
You think so? You don't think we could do 3 FPSs in a row?
No. It's not FPSs. I would never have given it to Counter-Strike.
You know what? Fiend has totally won me over. Baldur's Gate 2.
Woohoo!
Infinity Engine. Yes.
What? From behind? What's this?
From behind. Yep. There isn't one on this list.
There's a twist in this podcast.
There's a twist in this podcast, and it's called the Infinity Engine.
All right.
Baldur's Gate 2. Planescape didn't make it. Baldur's Gate didn't make it. Baldur's Gate 2, Game of the Year 2000.
See what happens when you put old guys on your show, guys? Sorry.
Chihira, somewhere Chihira, high fives. Okay. Are you ready for the quiz?
Let's do it.
Do it. I'm going to get 0 out of 5. Scribble, I'm looking at you.
You may get a couple.
I get to be the official fourth chair on this one.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. This is open to all three of you. So, question one out of 5.5. Deus Ex's famous 3 endings all conclude with a quote from a famous literary figure. Name one of the authors and the quote, if you can, from any one of the endings.
This is where I'm going to insert that cricket sound.
Anybody finish it?
I want to say Upton Sinclair is one of them.
Anybody?
That's all I got.
No. We have a quote from Voltaire. If there were no God, we would be forced to create him, which is the Helios ending. We have the better to reign in hell yet than serve in heaven from John Milton in Paradise Lost. And yesterday we obeyed kings and bent our necks before emperors, but today we kneel only to truth from Cahil Gibran and the New Dark Age ending. 0 stars.
0 for 1.
Okay, you might get this one.
All right.
Question 2. Several party members from Baldur's Gate 1 make notable reappearances as party members in Baldur's Gate 2. Name at least 4. There are 5.
Oh, boy. Okay, Imowen.
Yes.
Jahira.
Yes.
Minsk.
Yes. Here's where it gets tough.
Oh, shit.
So wish I could help you, man. I cannot remember. You just name the ones that I know.
No.
Both are evil characters.
Yep, and I can see the face, and I can't think of his name. It's the sorcerer guy.
His name was Edwin. And
the
girl's name was Viconia, and she was love interest, Drow.
I wanted to say Khalid, and then I remembered they killed him off.
Yeah, they kill him. 0. Okay.
Damn it.
Question 3. What weapon does April Ryan use to defeat Klax the Sorcerer?
The rubber chicken with a pulley in the middle.
A banana peel.
Anybody else? Longest Journey fans?
Did I mention the part where I didn't play PC games?
The answer is actually a calculator. Do you remember this? She has a fight with the sorcerer. They play hopscotch in his castle. They do a bunch of weird little puzzles. And then at the end, she pulls out a calculator, and it basically messes up his brain enough, and he disappears in a puff of logic.
That wasn't the rubber ducky?
It was close. It was equally ridiculous. Okay. Majora's Mask question. Anybody who had an N64? What time does playing the Song of Time in Majora's Mask rewind time to?
Anybody other than me, since I never played it?
Nighttime.
Scribble?
4:30?
Day zero? I don't know.
It's early in the morning.
4:20.
6 a.m. At the beginning of the day.
Dang.
All right, last question. Last official question, 0 for 4. You want the easy question or the hard question?
Diablo. Throw him a bone.
All right. Name all three of the greater evils with their complete titles.
Yeah, I got nothing.
What?
Oh, wait, with their complete... Oh, that's tough.
The greater evils.
Yep.
Diablo 2.
One of them's on the box.
Diablo?
It's Diablo, Bale, and...
Ortiz.
I don't know.
You got nothing? Diablo, Lord of Terror, Bale, Lord of Destruction,
Destruction.
Is the expansion pack's name, and Mephisto, Lord of Hatred.
Oh,
I also
Mephisto.
Had the, which two objects, what happens when you combine the Wurt's Leg and the Tome of Town Portal in the Heredra Cube? The answer
that's
is
easy.
It opens a secret cow level. So,
man.
Goose egg.
Sorry.
Dude.
Okay, last question. It's about The Sims. Fiend, you work at a store. Do you sell expansions at your bookstore?
No.
No? Can you name 5 of the 7 Sims expansion packs?
No, and I'm very glad that I can.
Can anyone?
Pets. 80s. Surfboards. Lingerie. and CDRs.
Yeah. Live in Large, Host Party, Hot Date, Vacation, Unleashed, which is the Pets one, and Superstar, which are the 7 official EA Sims expansion packs. So all nothing. Right. Sorry. But you might get the bonus question. What,
all right.
What gizmo is in Kate Archer's belt buckle?
Dang it. Okay. Can I throw a couple?
It's a neck massager.
No. What is it? Anybody?
Doesn't she have like a quarter? And then doesn't she have like a little makeup?
She does.
That flips up.
But the thing the thing that's in her belt buckle is the same thing as Data had in Goonies. It's like a grappling hook, barrel kind of thing. Sorry, guys.
Oh, God,
you almost had the Baldur's Gate one.
Stupid good character.
So he get okay. So he gets 0.5 of a point at least.
0.5, yes.
Half of okay.
Half
so he gets something.
That's the Games of 2000 gaming quiz. Sorry.
All right.
Mike
all right,
would be proud.
Yeah.
Stumped you.
Yeah. Totally. Okay, weekend gaming. Who's been playing? Okay, Beige, I know you've been playing a lot of games.
Fiend, let's have it out over Bionic Commando.
Oh, I'm just going on the reviews. The reviews say it's a poop.
Really?
Okay.
Well, I play it, and I say it ain't.
Okay, well, hold on. I have something to say about it. And this is not about the game proper. It's about the way that it was presented to the demo crowd. Okay. They released a multiplayer online only demo for the 360. So what happens is you download it, you go into the game, your only option is to play multiplayer online with the general public. No tutorial, no, hey, this is how you control the guy, no nothing. So you get to go in and try to learn how to use the grappling hook and the gun and everything else while people are taking you out every 5 freaking seconds.
Okay.
So
you know how the single player campaign begins after the very, very first segment is a very long and very necessary tutorial on using the grappling hook. And it's actually done as a flashback, and your character is dressed up in the green outfit with the crazy red hair and the shades that he's wearing in the NES version. Which is cool. I love it. I played Bionic Commando all day on Sunday, almost. It's hard. That's not something I was expecting. I am playing it on the hardest difficulty level, so on my own head be it. But on that difficulty level, it's almost a one-hit kill experience. It would probably be a lot more forgiving if you weren't doing that. But what it does turn it into is almost a sort of a well-realized transition from the 8-bit version. And I am prepared in my own sort of mind to say that it does successfully for Bionic Commando what Metroid Prime did for Metroid, which is that it takes the 8-bit series to the third dimension while keeping the stuff from the 8-bit series that was cool. Not a big fan of the new Red with his super gravelly attitude and this like gruff banter he has going on with Super Joe, who's your mission controller,
and the fact that he's a white guy with dreadlocks.
Well, like I said to you on the instant messaging,
I know
why they did the dreadlocks because the importance of having your hair fly about as you're swinging back and forth it adds a lot to the experience, and they didn't have the hardware to render individual strands. So I'm okay with the dreads.
I can totally see that, but you got to see my point though.
Sure, it's way too much attitude, and it's not enough silly Hitler being resurrected and being called Master D for my taste yet. Although I'm not at the end of the game, but I will say using that wire is damn fun. And the thing that I love about it, you know, I played the Tomb Raider Legend games, and you have a wire like that. What they don't let you do, that they do let you do in Bionic Commando, is that basically everything you can see, with the exception of stuff that would throw you out of the level if you grabbed a hold of it, is fair game. So you can fling yourself anywhere, look about, go, oh my god, I need a Hail Mary, throw out the rope, and you can. It's well done. You can attach it to the end. Like if there's a crane flying by and you're falling to your death, you can usually spin about, see that crane out of your peripheral vision and snap it and save yourself at the last second from, you know, falling into the pit. And the swinging is done well. I really had a good time. It's like I said, I'm playing it on a hard difficulty level, and it's hard as hell. The fights are very difficult, and I die a lot. The only complaint that I have about Bionic Commando is that for some reason they did it so that when you die, you lose all of the power-ups that you are the collectibles and stuff that you've collected up until that point in the level, and the checkpoints are spaced very far apart. So it's, you can easily replay like 15 minutes of play from a missed jump.
That was great.
So that part's tough. But the rest of it, I really like. And the music is really well done. It's a reorchestration of all the 8-bit stuff that I love. So personally for me, Bionic Commando does the job. Now, I know that I noticed that the reviews are like 6.5s or 7s, but the fan reviews are like 9.5s. So I think it's one of those really polarizing games where you like it a lot or you find things to hate on. And it's easy to hate on, but I like it a lot.
Well, it sounds to me it's going to be one of those kind of games like Ninja Gaiden, where I'm sure it's great, and I'm sure you know people like yourself and Pishu who are really good at those kind of games and really love that kind of challenge are going to get into it. But I'm going to go into it, play like 20 minutes, get my ass handed to me like a you know.
Well, I can't
like I'm
like
walking
I said,
into the freaking South Central LA with a black people T-shirt or something.
Yeah. Like I said, I can't speak for the other difficulty levels, but after having just played Prince of Persia, where seriously, I could have slept through 2/3 of that game. Now, I still enjoyed it, but it was boring. The traversing around was boring, and this is the opposite of boring. The levels are crazily designed, and instead of it being very easy and understandable how you're supposed to get from one place to another, it's basically, use that arm, son, have fun, because there's no quick and easy route through it. And I appreciate that. So,
okay,
fair enough. What else? What else have you been doing?
I can tell you about Punch-Out.
Yes,
please
do.
I also played that. Do you like Punch-Out?
I was a big, big fan of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. I believe that I was... I had a friend who did beat Mike Tyson, but I did not. I beat everyone up until him.
If you liked Punch-Out, it's more of the same. It's very well done. It's got a lot of humor in it. It's quite a bit easier, I think, than previous Punch-Out, but it still gets tricky. Now, I was pretty good at Punch-Out. I never did beat Mike Tyson, but I did beat Mr. Sandman back in the day.
Yes.
And I sat down in an afternoon and fought my way right up to the last guy. Mm-hmm. I did have to continue a couple of times, but it didn't really fight me. That's not a bad thing. The last guy is tough. He punched me out, and my fingers were literally, I had calluses and skin flaking off the front of my fingers. I've been playing it so hard, so I left it for the rest of the day. May go back to it, but it's good stuff. The it's hilarious, like it's really funny. The animation just has a ton of charm and personality, and it's Punch It. There's not anything really different about it. There's like three different guys, three or four new boxers, but mostly it's the same stable of guys that you know. They don't fight exactly the same as they did in the 8-bit days, but if you turn your controller sideways, I've never tried it with the actual flailing my arms about like an idiot, but if the AB for left and right punch, pushing the big fat button on the Wii for star punch works great. And with old school punch out controls, you know, your mileage may vary depending on how much value you see in an experience that is over pretty fast, but for the kiddies who are obsessed with that sort of thing, they can fight through a much harder mode after they beat the original, and all the characters have new moves, and they're much more difficult. So
right on.
I like Punch It.
Yeah, I read that sort of title defense mode is like the meat of the game. After
it's very difficult. All right, so I'm told, because Glass Joe isn't very difficult without it.
All right, is that it? Just those two big ones?
Give shout-outs to Patapon 2, which I'm still playing. Not much to say about it. I just like it. It's Patapon with some extra goodness. And we've been playing a bunch of Fear 2. You haven't listened. I spoke at length about it on the last Exploding Barrel, so I'm not going to dwell on it. My enthusiasm for Fear 2 has cooled a little bit since the last time I talked about it. It's a solid B game. Like, it's okay. It's fun. It's not very tough. The original Fear was tough, so I was surprised that Fear 2 wasn't, but I just finished a level in it that was maybe the most lovingly redone grade school I've ever played through in a game, and blasting goons in that was great, with all the like little short chairs with that are like blue, and the little kids' drawings on the walls, and the cafeteria, and the gym, and it was just a great level, and the designers obviously had a blast doing it, so
It's not scary. I Twittered about this earlier. I said anytime you put a gun in somebody's hand and you've been blowing away guys consistently for half an hour at this point in, you know, just numerous ways, it's not frightening if a ghost jumps out in front of you and goes boo. But that doesn't necessarily make it bad. It just makes it a good summer popcorn kind of game.
Okay.
So I like it. Right, that's about all I've been playing.
Let me go ahead and go because my list is extremely short. I literally have taken about a 3-week break from games just to kind of work on a couple of projects that I've been doing. But I did have the chance to play some of the Xbox community demos finally. And I tried, from Pete's recommendation, I tried Groove. And it's all right. I mean, it really is Geometry Wars with cool music effects. But it didn't hold my attention. But, you know, hey, was it like $2 or something like that? $2.50? So
Have you tried Everyday Shooter?
No, I have not. Because they don't have a demo for it. And from what I understand, like once you get to level 3, it becomes maddeningly difficult. And that, to me, means I'll spend $10 and hate myself in the morning for it. So,
It's a really good fusion of music and Geometry Wars. That's the only thing I'd say.
Yeah.
I will actually wait until it goes on sale because I really love how all these downloadable games are going on sale nowadays. Where, I mean, just this week they dropped Bionic Commando Rearm down to $5. I mean, that's perfect. And that's like such a steal for that game. So I'm sure they'll do the same for Everyday Shooter. So I'll pick it up. I'll try it then. But
why don't you
wait
till you come up to my house? Then you can play it.
Okay, yeah, I'll just do that. Great idea. And then I played this one game called Trino, which is you're a little, like a little amoeba kind of thing. You look more like a tadpole, I guess. And you're in this area that's marked off by, it starts off by a square area where it's marked off by four little circles. And literally all you do is you create triangles to capture enemies that are kind of swimming into your area. It was a fun little diversion for a while, but it wasn't enough for me to want to buy it. So unfortunately, just like all the games that I tried, I just was a little bit underwhelmed by. There was this one that if you go on to the like top, like the most popular games or whatever, it's called like eMix or I forgot what it's called, but it's literally like a music maker kind of thing, you know, like almost like the Korg or DS. Yeah, kind of like that, but not intuitive at all. And I messed around with that for 2 seconds till I felt stupid. So I did try Gel, which is the new game that just released this week. And that seemed pretty fun. It's where you get to play as this little whimsical character and you get to slide different colored squares of gel along the floor and make things disappear. But ultimately, it's been a pretty uneventful game. Uneventful, you know, time here for me playing games, but my son has been playing Too Human because he got a really smoking deal for it. I think he got it for like $10 from Gamefly, and I stand by my original statement where Too Human is the video game equivalent of 90s comic books, where it's over the top, everything like design, everybody's bald, everybody's like overly designed. But absolutely no substance. And I noticed the camera's really jacked up, too. Like, I'll try to watch him, and there's, like, no gradual movement of the camera. Like, he'll be looking in this one direction, and then a split second later, you're looking in a 180 direction, and there's no transition. It's, like, very disorienting, and I don't know. I kind of get the feeling like I'm playing something like Smash Brothers or something where I'm, like, staring at a screen going, oh, where the hell am I? What am I doing? So, luckily, this week, you know, all the good games have been released, and next week, Infamous comes out, and I'm really looking forward to that. I'm downloading the demo right now. It's actually waiting for me, so I want to wrap up this podcast so I can get to playing it. But that's pretty much all I've been doing.
I can talk a little about Infamous, because I just, I downloaded the, I mean, I guess it just went up on the US store, but I you know, snuck onto my British account, and picked it off the European store and played the demo for about an hour before we started recording. It's pretty good. It's
It's enjoyable.
I have faith that Sucker Punch will create a good game. I'm going to buy it sight unseen, just because it's the guys who made Sly.
Me too.
Yeah, I'll probably pick it up. As everyone's saying, it's a lot more shooting than you expect. The enemies actually do a really good job of running away from you when you try to go up and melee them. So it's a lot of, you end up using that sort of blast wave power to blow cars at them and stuff like that a lot. The only thing that I was worried about was in the videos I was watching, it looks like the climbing was kind of slow, you know. They sort of take the crackdown thing and kick it up a notch and let you sort of, it's more like Assassin's Creed actually, you know, where you're sort of, he's grabbing actual handholds on everything. The only thing is, like, it does that sort of weird, I think, Baze, you played Tomb Raider Underworld, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does that sort of, like, you know, in that game where you jump, I only played the demo, but you know where you jump and you're sort of jumping onto a wall and you can see that the character's sort of, like, locking on, locking into the animation?
Mm-hmm.
It does that thing a lot in Infamous because you're sort of, you can basically jump and land on almost everything. Instead of jumping onto the staircase, you jump onto the stair rail and run down it or whatever. And it almost does that a little too much. But I don't know. Otherwise, it's a lot of fun. They pretty much give you all the powers in the demo. So I guess sort of like Crackdown, where you level up really fast. But I don't know what else to say about it. It's they give you a taste of, like, I guess the good and evil stuff. If you watch some of the videos, it seems pretty corny. It's like, do you want to protect these medical supplies and give them to these faithful civilians, or destroy everyone and keep them for yourself? You know, it's very black and white.
That's disappointing. But
yeah,
Arcade has already made fun of that, so I won't now.
Yeah, but apparently your, like, karma level affects, you know, what kind of powers you use and stuff. But they don't do a great job of explaining it to you in the demo. So, like, if you die, you'll come back as good, fully good, and then if you the next mission, you'll be fully evil. I guess they want to get you to, you know, try everything. But the only real difference at first, it just seems like, if I'm good, I shoot blue lightning. If I'm bad, I shoot red lightning. So,
it to me looks like, I missed out on Crackdown, and I loved The Incredible Hulk, Ultimate Destruction.
That was a damn fun game, I have to say.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was, of course, as usual for me, it was awesome until I got way too damn hard. But I'm ready for a game like this where I can just kind of run around and just wreak havoc or save people. It definitely gives me the Spider-Man vibe, the way he clings to things, the way he kind of crawls around them, and how he shoots electricity like his web, which typically would turn me off because I can't stand Spider-Man. But this, everything about this game just really kind of appeals to me right now. And the soundtrack is done by Amon Tobin, who's an artist that I recommended on a Squad Recommend segment once. He doesn't do the whole soundtrack, but a lot of it. And unfortunately, it's only available on iTunes, but I'm still going to buy it anyway. It's all the sounds really cool in it.
You got anything else?
Yeah. Since I got home for, unexplainable reasons, I have a MacBook at school. So I come home to a desktop PC and I get to, you know, experience a lot of the games that I missed during the year. So I've been digging into, for one thing, I've renewed my WoW addiction, but I think it's a...
Oh, no.
Yeah. I have a great guild. They're great. They're just great guys. I'm in Can't Quit You. I don't know if any of you guys ever listened to Legendary Thread.
I listened to it once because I heard Jeff Green was on it, and then they started talking about WoW, and I had no idea what the hell they were talking about, and I said, I can't do it.
Yeah. It's still going strong, even though no one from 1UP plays there anymore, you know?
Oh, really?
There's, like, Karen Chu logs on, like, once a month or something, and Jeff Green has characters in the guild, but he rarely plays. But yeah, I think there's a... it seems like there's a general rule in video game podcasting that I'm not allowed, that you're not allowed to talk about WoW podcast.
No, we never talk about WoW, so you can talk about
play,
it if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to sway us either way, so yeah, go for it.
Yeah, there's not much to say. I mean, Wrath is great. I'm leveling a Death Knight. It's very fast, and the only thing is, like, Blizzard in Wrath, the 70 to 80 expansion, they did it right. It's this, you get the like one more quest feeling again that you don't really get in the rest of WoW, I would say. You know, just one more.
Yeah.
I won't talk about WoW too much.
You know what, though? I can understand why people keep continue to play WoW. Like, for instance, if I had played WoW and I had met, like, all the guys in the squad through a guild in WoW and that was the only thing they played, I would have continued playing. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people get into the guilds and they make these really, really good friends, and it's like you play WoW to hang out with your friends. So I definitely get that appeal, which is why I can't get myself involved in it. I got, you know,
the worst thing for me would be internet with a skin and powers.
Yes,
I'd be over. It'd be done. Forget it.
Yep.
Yeah,
I'd be divorced, you know, on the street. It would be ugly.
Yeah, and it's almost like I can't, you know, go and play another MMO because it just wouldn't be the same. You know,
monogamous.
Without having that community just waiting for you. Other than WoW, some other PC games, I guess that's ironic considering my 11-year-old self, but Call of Duty 5 went on sale recently. Okay. It was like half off on Steam. So I grabbed that. I don't know, I enjoyed the demo on 360 more than I thought I would. I've heard bad things about the multiplayer, like the dogs. Everyone hates the dogs.
Okay.
So I'm not that interested in that. But, you know, for $25, I figured, you know, an old Call of Duty experience, it's worth it. So, I don't know. Sorry?
That's it?
I thought Rock was about to say something.
I was. Sorry, and then you cut off, so I didn't hear you say. Okay, I just wanted to say one quick thing. I guess they announced this week that Modern Warfare 2 is not going to have online co-op, so that is no longer going to be a day one purchase for me. Even though it's Infinity Ward and I love the hell out of Call of Duty 4, I still have Call of Duty 4 on the shelf. If I want that experience, I'll just break it out again, you know? That's what I was really hoping for. I was hoping to play Call of Duty 4 online with my squad buddies, and now that I can't, forget it.
Deal.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a weird experience with World at War, because when I first started, it was like almost like a nostalgic experience, you know, going back to World War II shooters, something I hadn't played in forever. And it's all, you know, it's not like you play a World War II shooter and it's a new story. You know, it's sort of a genre unto itself, but you know, you have all the same weapons, all the same storylines and everything. It's just a very strangely nostalgic thing.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. And the only thing people love to hate on Treyarch, the only thing I'll give them props for is that they gave the main character in this FPS a voice, and I love them for that.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing.
That's rare.
You actually hear your guy, you know, ordering his squad around and stuff. It's fantastic.
Hmm.
Other than that, I mean, the game is enormously repetitive. But, getting into, like, the fourth or fifth hour, I'm like, oh, right. It's like a, you know, I'm done with the shooting gallery.
Yeah.
That wonderful, infinitely spawning enemies in Call of Duty.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, cool. Fiend, you want to bring us home?
Okay. I have been playing Fallout 3, actually.
I saw that.
The DLC.
What I did was I waited till all three packs were out, downloaded them all, slapped them all in there, and kind of pretended it was Fallout 3.5.
So is AJ right? Is there $40 worth of game in there, or whatever it was that he said?
Well, you know, I don't know if there is yet, but the best thing that they did with Broken Steel, other than fixing the ending, and I won't get into spoiler land, is because of the level cap being raised. I was one of those players that once I got to level 20 and there was no more experience to be gained, I said, well, fuck this, I'm not doing any more stuff. And I just went and did the end of the game, and that was that. I still have probably 5 achievement-worthy quests left.
Hmm.
So I'm first thing I did was I went and played Anchorage, Operation Anchorage, which is probably 3.5 hours worth of gameplay. It basically plays like a big quest from the main game.
Okay.
And now I'm going and doing all of what I'm calling the achievement quests to get those done, get some experience. I'm up at about level 24 right now. Then I'll go do the pit, and then I'll do the Broken Steel stuff. I would say first blush, yeah, there probably is enough stuff to warrant getting all of them and kind of revving up the Fallout 3 engine again.
Hmm.
Funny thing for me, just more I'm an idiot, I hadn't played it in a while, and I guess somebody somewhere had said Operation Anchorage plays more like a shooter.
Yeah.
So I just sort of had that in my head, and I'm playing it, and I was like, yeah, you know, it really kind of does play more like a shooter. I'm going through ammo a lot faster. This is pretty crazy stuff. Once I was done with it, played it straight through, all the way, beginning to end. And then I was doing another quest, and I was doing something, and a super mutant came to attack me, and I accidentally bumped the right button, and the VAT system came up.
You forgot about it.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that's that. That makes a lot of sense now why I was struggling before. Okay.
All right. So the same thing happened to me in Fear, actually. I played for about 45 minutes the last night before I remembered that there was bullet time on the Y button.
Yeah, so now I'm actually playing it the way that it was supposed to be played. So now I'm like, oh, yeah, this game's awesome. It's great. I love Fallout. Baze, you and I have talked about 2007. Our gut reaction told us BioShock was our game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But after some further review, we're kind of like, well, no, it was really Uncharted.
Yep.
Last year, when it was all said and done, I kind of thought it might have been Prince of Persia, but you know what? It was really Fallout.
It's really Fallout, yeah. I'm pretty sure that when the squad comes around to talking about 2007 again, or 2008, it'll be Fallout. I can't think of any other standouts in that category.
Yeah. That's all I've been playing.
Yeah, I cool. Did we talk about the Fallout 3 DLC hitting PS3 finally?
We did not.
No. Okay, yeah. So, real quick, the PS3 version's getting all the DLC. So, what I'm waiting for is they're going to release a Game of the Year version, like, I think in October of this year, with a PS3, where it's for all of them, for PC, 360, and PS3. It's the game with all the DLC, and I'm going to hold out and buy the PS3 version of that. Because they're going to fix, I would imagine they're going to fix all the bugs in the PS3 version and plus the DLC. I only played about 6 hours into the 360 version, so I don't mind replaying that, but I'm holding off on that one for the holidays.
Worth it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it, for sure.
I bet, yeah. I'm stoked about it.
Am I the only person in the world who is not a fan of Fallout 3?
Yes. No, my brother hated it.
Really?
Yep. Did he?
Yep.
He's disowned.
You know what?
He played it from beginning to end. He finished it and hated it.
My wife likes Fallout, but she is not a fan of the world, the post-apocalyptic Washington thing. Not so much. But
he never got his mind around the shooter RPG, which is it thing. He just couldn't make those things work in his head.
Hmm.
Well, I can. It works in my head. I just don't think that. I think that if you speak the language of a shooter, if you look and act like a shooter, you need to at least, you know, have some sort of, I wouldn't say realism, but, you know, if I shoot a guy in the head, he should die, is what I'm saying. You know, a guy who doesn't have a helmet on, if I shoot him in the head, he should die. You know, and I shouldn't have to shoot him in the head 30,000 times because I'm level 2 and he's level 30. That's the kind of thing that gets to me in that game.
But I mean, that is an RPG, but I guess sometimes something about when you make it look like a first-person shooter, like, you're right, it looks, if I shot him, he should be dead.
Yeah. All right, well, we're probably over 2 hours now, huh?
Oh, yeah, whatever. I knew we were going to break the Minotti limit.
Yeah.
Which you get for putting four squad people on a podcast. Scribble, are you ready to bring it home with the releases and stuff?
Yeah.
Are you good for that?
Yeah. Well, let's get to it. I mean, I gotta be honest. I love the exploding barrel. I kind of zone out when AJ goes through this part.
Do it like the Micro Machines man, then, and just go.
Yeah. We're gonna hit the stars.
Hit
of the
highlights.
Show.
I don't need to know the Wii Pirate Party that I'm never gonna play.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, so UFC Undisputed came out this week. Apparently, incredibly deep fighting. My friend says. I don't know if that's not really my cup of tea. I don't know about you guys.
I've heard the same. I heard it's really good. I heard it's really good, and the thing is that actually I'm really glad this game's coming out because it's going to be good for the industry because it's going to sell a lot to a lot of non-gamers, and they're going to play it, and they're actually going to like it. So they're going to want to buy more games, you know, instead of just, you know what I'm saying?
I hadn't considered it, but you're probably right.
Yeah, so I think it's good for the industry, but I won't buy it.
Yeah, Punch-Out and Bionic Commando we talked about.
Yep.
Terminator Salvation, I guess just in time for the movie release.
Yawn.
I'm sure that's doing really well in reviews. EA Sports Active, game, non-game, you decide.
I will be getting that this week.
EA will sell many copies.
I'll go outside and run around instead.
Oh, whatever.
Just because it's summer, apparently. You want to be running around in the sun, enjoying
and
life.
Doing your 360 backflips.
I'm going to go by EA kicks. Frolic.
Sorry, go ahead, Scroll.
Apparently, Boomblock's Bash Party came out this week.
Yes, it's on the way.
Didn't even know there was a sequel.
Yep,
I liked Boomblock's. I hope it's got staying power. Good luck.
Apparently, it's reviewing well. So apparently, it's good, and it's on the way from Gamefly for me. Looking forward.
All right, let me know.
Cool. Steel Princess for the DS, a revolutionary take on the classic video game formula of rescuing the princess. I don't know anything about this game.
Is this an Atlas game? Sounds like an Atlas game. Don't worry about that.
Don't know. I don't have that information. It is Atlas. Sorry.
There you go.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, on the downloadable front... there's no easy way to tell you about PSN stuff, so we're going to go to XBLA. I think Rock mentioned Gel came out this week.
Yep.
Some game called Blazing Birds. And Halo Wars Strategic Options add-on. Add some new game modes if anyone is still playing that.
Which they are not.
Yeah, which you're not.
That's about it. Go download the Infamous demo.
Yeah, well, the Infamous demo and, again, the Monster Hunter Freedom Unite demo for the PSP. That's also on PSN that's worth mentioning.
I'm going to go get the Infamous demo right now.
Free?
No.
No, I no missed longer. My window on that. Shit. Oh, well.
It's good. It's basically a little... It's like Smash Brothers mixed with Little Big Planet. Okay. It's pretty clever. It's good for free, for sure. All right.
That is
finally.
We did it.
I think we officially fixed what was wrong with the Exploding Barrel podcast.
Yeah, the Minotti brothers. Fix
that's
that
right.
Shit.
You know what? We're gaining more listeners for them for the Exploding Barrel podcast, and so that one was that was directly for you, Kent Doggy Dog. Okay. So with that, let's wrap it up. Next week, the Minottis will be returning and bringing the show back to its former glory. You can find the Exploding Barrel podcast on SquadronOfShame.com. You can follow it on Twitter, at Exploding Barrel. You can reach, if you want to send emails to any of us, it's Rock, that's ROC, at SquadronOfShame.com. You guys want to do your emails as well?
Wager at SquadronOfShame.com, Beige at SquadronOfShame.com, Scribble, I don't think you have an address, but we'll set one up after the show. And we're all on Twitter.
Yes.
That's really why I'm here, to get you guys to set me up with a squad
good.
Address.
Good.
Well, you're in the club now.
That's right. And also, if you want to follow anybody else squad, you can go to the SquadronOfShame.com website. All of our Twitter addresses are there, so... That's all I got. Anybody else have anything?
Let's punch
you. You need a cool sign off. Do it. What do you got?
All right. We out.
Slam with the best? No?
die like the rest.
Sorry, yeah, it's from last week. Charles Barkley shut up and jam guided.
Ending right. With a whimper.
Later, guys.